You've probably heard the media reports about the nationwide prison strike that started last month. Participating prisoners are demanding reforms to the current system. Calls for prison reform are nothing new. And today we head back nearly a century to the 1930s to explore the life and the work of a Michigan prison reformer, Chaplain Albert Ewart. State Archivist Mark Harvey is with the Michigan History Center, and he is back with us. Hello, Mark.
Hello.
Also with us, the co-founder of the University of Michigan's Prison Creative Arts Project, Mary Heinen. Welcome, Mary.
Hello.
Very good to have you both with us. Mark, start us off by telling us something about his early life. Was he a Michigan native, or did he settle here later in life?
He settled here later in life. He was born in the Wyoming Territory in 1886 and was the son of a minister and bounced around. Eventually went to Greer College and Northwestern University and became a minister himself and met his future wife doing spiritual work in Memphis, Missouri, and they eventually settled in Grand Ledge, Michigan, of all places.
And then how did he and when did he begin to work in prisons?
He began in 1933. He was appointed by Governor Comstock to be the chaplain of the new Jackson Prison. Our first state institution that we built as a state was the State Prison of Southern Michigan in 1839. So here we are almost 100 years later, 96 years, opening the new prison right across the street, essentially. A lot of it was the same, walls, cells. But bringing Ewart in was really taking a new direction with this new prison.
And through Chaplain Albert Ewart's work, he started making observations on what he felt was working and what wasn't. And certainly, prisons from a century ago were very different from the prisons of today. How would you describe the commonly accepted way of dealing with criminals then?
Harsh punishment. When I toured the original 1839 facility, I was brought down into the solitary confinement room at the lower level and was told that that's where everybody went to start off with, just to soften them up. It was just a raised platform in a room in the basement, and they shut the door for us just to give us a taste of what it was like, and it was utter darkness. Frankly, it was terrifying for 60 seconds. I can't imagine what 30 days would be like. So people weren't there to be reformed. They were there to be punished for their crime.
And so how did Ewart want to change this approach? What did he want to do?
Well, we're going to talk about what he did for reform as far as the arts, but he also had a very interesting notion about parole and second chances. And one of his main ideas was that the judge should not decide the guilty or not guilty verdict in the cases that were non-juried and the sentence. He thought that there should be an independent five-person commission embedded in the prison itself that would determine parole. And these people could be observing the inmates, the prisoners, in their daily lives, and therefore would make a much more informed decision as to whether they were ready to come back to society. And that was a pretty radical notion to separate that sentencing power from the judge.
Well, it certainly seems like Chaplain Ewart was a man ahead of his time. Mary, what kind of reforms was he allowed to try in Jackson that were so new for the time?
The chaplain created an arts and crafts program, which is now legendary because it established that prisoners, even though incarcerated, have the ability and the drive and the will to create art, whether it's writing poems or writing stories or painting or drawing or singing, creating music. In fact, in his artifacts, we find bookends from 1933 to 34. There's a box, there's a compass, there's frames for photos. So it's clear from the record that he allowed as much as possible the expression of art and creative genius among the prisoners and among staff, because certainly that built a little camaraderie, so to speak, among the community, and it made it more livable.
And just to be clear, do we know if this was the first prisoner art program or had it been tried elsewhere before?
It's the first that I'm aware of anywhere.
So now I'm also wondering, when you think of this period in our nation's history, in the 1930s, a lot of crime related to prohibition and mob violence and the Great Depression. So was there a lot of support for the chaplain's reform ideas, or was there pushback?
There was definitely pushback, especially on the idea of sentencing. And in my opinion, he was a man ahead of his time because some of his ideas are now exactly what sentencing guidelines are based on, with the goal of sentencing uniformity, so that in one jurisdiction you would get life, but in another you would get 5 years. That was evened out as time went on. But I think one of the original ideas about that in Michigan was the chaplains.
What do you want to add to that, Mark?
It wasn't just artwork that he was promoting. He promoted all of the arts. He had a weekly radio show where he eventually had prisoners from the general population performing musically on his show, and it would get comments back from listeners to the tune of, I can't believe such angelic sounds are coming from people inside the walls of that prison. And it really touched people that these individuals, as it should, these individuals were real human beings. They weren't just inmates or prisoners. They were real human beings that were trying to express themselves, and Ewart gave them the avenue to do that.
As he aged and as he continued in his ministry, did he continue pressing for prison reforms, Mark?
Yeah, he ran into a little bit of trouble from a Thanksgiving dinner where he had 18 of his trusted program attendees accompany him offsite with, I think, a half a dozen prison guards to his residence on the grounds for a Thanksgiving Day dinner. And press got word of that, and it really sort of blew up in his face. It's during the Depression, and people are railing against the fact that here are these inmates that are having a nice Thanksgiving dinner at a private residence when there's hardworking people struggling just to get a meal. And then that was compounded by the fact that one of those people that attended that Thanksgiving dinner later escaped. So that really compromised his reform position, probably unfairly, and he eventually was forced out. I think that was in 1935, but a year later, Governor Frank Murphy was elected. He brought him right back in and had him study the entire penal system as a measure of reform, and then eventually appointed him as the director of probation, which put him in probably a more powerful position to have influence over something that was dear to his heart. You know, he was always more than a chaplain. He was more like an assistant warden than he was a chaplain with his ideas. But because he was chaplain, he had a different sphere of influence than a warden would. The inmates referred to him as their sky pilot. That was their affectionate term for him.
Their sky pilot. That is a great name. So how long was he active, and when did he die?
He was appointed as the supervisor of probation and was in that position until 1949. And then he was promoted to the director of probation, which then he held that position until 1952 at age 66. And then he passed away in 1984 at age 98.
That was a long life. Mary, from where you sit and the work you do, what do you believe the legacy of Chaplain Ewart is, both for the general public and for those who have served time in correctional facilities?
He understood that you can't just lock people up and throw away the key and expect them to remain in prison for the rest of their lives without giving them an opportunity to create art or have something to do to spend their days and nights. And I think the fact that he really had a clear understanding of what it meant to serve all those years and years locked up with thousands and thousands of other prisoners is very important, because it's one thing to spout the rhetoric about you should do the time if you do the crime, but it's another to take a look at what that actually means. What do all those years mean? He gave opportunity and an understanding in the early days to what it is to be a creative human being, and that legacy carries on through the work of the Prison Creative Arts Project. We currently and have curated art from every prison in Michigan, and this year we'll be having in March, our 24th annual exhibition of art by Michigan prisoners, which is world class. The art is phenomenal. It includes 3D, just like the chaplain's folks in the beginning of his reign. And it's clearly understood by correctional people now and by prisoners now, the importance and place of creative arts, including music and theater and drama, in the life of folks that have to deal with the criminal justice system.
In your work, Mary, with the Prison Creative Arts Project, what have you personally witnessed as you've seen prisoners get access to creative arts programs?
Time and time again, we've received mail and spoken with prisoners who were suffering from addiction and from mental illness and from, you know, the harshness of the penal system. They write and say that doing this work has saved their life. It kept them from, you know, the pits of depression, and it gave them an outlet and a vehicle to be able to express what they needed to say and to work out their own grief and joy and agony and pain and, you know, whatever the person is going through their art. And we have prisoners that have participated in our program for all of its 29 years. We have great friends in the program who have become very close to all of us because they share so much of their lives, even though they're locked up.
Mark, tell us about the display that the Michigan History Museum is going to have starting September 8th.
Yeah, the first national traveling exhibition to explore the history and future of mass incarceration called States of Incarceration will open up at the Michigan History Museum this Saturday, and it runs through May 19th. It's sort of a mixed show, so it's a traveling show, but then we have collections, including Albert Ewart's collection, that we will feather into it to tell a Michigan side of this story.
What's the message and the story told in this exhibit, States of Incarceration?
It's a dialogue in some ways to get us to think differently about those who are incarcerated or formerly incarcerated and what that means and how as a society we can move forward and frankly accept back into society those individuals that had this experience.
And again, that will be opening Saturday, September 8th, running through May 19th, so plenty of time to get to the Michigan History Museum to see this first national traveling exhibition exploring the history and future of mass incarceration in this country. We want to thank both State Archivist Mark Harvey with the Michigan History Center and the co-founder of the University of Michigan's Prison Creative Arts Project, Mary Heinen. Thank you so much for sharing the life and the legacy of Michigan prison reformer Chaplain Albert Ewart. It was great talking with you both.
Thank you.
Thanks, Cindy.